Good evening. My name is Paulette, Mayor of Kingsborough. It is my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's meeting on Monday the 5th of December 2022. Welcome to those in the public gallery who have joined us this evening, and also a very warm welcome to those people who are watching along at home via YouTube. Being 5:30pm, I now officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that Council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. In accordance with the Council's policy, I will now ask the General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Confirmed, Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to Elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Richardson. From our staff this evening we have the General Manager Mr Arnold, Director of Engineering Services Mr Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services Mr Smee, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Dr Fox, the Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, the Communications and Engagement Support Officer, Ms Klein, Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton, and Manager Environmental Services, Ms Quinn. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Street. Still on page one, confirmation of minutes that the minutes of the open session of Council meeting number 22 held on the 21st of November 2022 be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Still on page one, workshops held since the last Council meeting on the 28th of November last Monday. We had a workshop in relation to sports ground user fees. Turning to page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? No, thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to move from closed into open session or open into closed? Thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public who is with us this evening like to ask a question without notice? No. Oh, you do? Thank you very much. If you could just come to the lectern and turn on the microphone by pressing the talk button. And if you could just state your name and suburb first and then ask your question, please.
Okay, Charles Biggins, Leslie Vale. I have some questions regarding the biodiversity offset. Is that an agenda item I'm allowed to ask? Question.
No, you're allowed to ask that.
Cool. Every other state of Australia and the Commonwealth runs a biodiversity offset scheme through their government environment ministries, backed by Acts of Parliament and with the authority to levy new taxes. What was the legal advice given to Kingborough Council in 2004 and more recently with the formation of the Biodiversity Offset Scheme that led to the belief that an environmental offset and now a biodiversity offset scheme could legally be administered by a local council?
General Manager, please.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question, Mr. Biggins. My colleague, Ms. Quinn, may wish to elaborate further on the response. But let me start by saying that under the Local Government Act, all councils, all 29 councils in Tasmania, are entitled to charge fees or charges. That's the starting point.
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question, Mr. Biggins. In 2004, Council was part of a regional consultation in the southern region of Tasmania because there are a number of southern councils who wanted to look at biodiversity offsetting in local government. Through that regional group, which was run through the Southern Tasmanian Councils Authority, the councils went to the state government, which was DePickwe at the time, the department, and advocated for the for the department to take on biodiversity offsetting, and at that time they weren't interested in doing that. They were developing their own policy, but were very happy for council to develop theirs. We also worked with the Forest Practices Authority at the time, and they also had their own policy but were encouraging of council to develop them ours. So both of those organisations have had input into council's policy. They're aware of it. The department, most recently in the most recent review of the policy, had input into the policy and provided feedback on it. And we haven't sought legal input into the policy, as council hasn't believed it's required.
Thank you, Mr. Biggins. Do you have a further question?
Yes. Yeah. As only the states and Commonwealth have the authority to levy new taxes, and they make no claims that the biodiversity offsets are not a tax, how does Kimberley Council's offset payments differ from a state or Commonwealth tax?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Council is the belief that our offset policy does not use taxes. So a biodiversity offset, as you'd be aware under the policy, is not a tax. It is a fee that is set by council, and that's how it is named in the policy. So it appears we have a difference of opinion about whether the financial offset is a fee. I would also like to point out, though, that biodiversity offsetting under the policy, financial offsets are the absolute residual amount of a biodiversity offset, and the hierarchy in our policy sets out, as is common in most biodiversity offset policies, that biodiversity offsets are best when they're on site, because they're supposed to match value for value. So what is being cleared is supposed to be very similar in value. Like for like is another way of putting that. So I guess a focus on the fee part, on the financial offset, seems interesting to me, given that biodiversity offsetting in Kimbra is really about on-site offset, or if not on-site, then off-site. And financial offsets are only used for that residual amount that is left over, and that is what our policy states must be the case, that they must be part of a offset package.
$1 million worth of residual. Yep. So in the formation of the new biodiversity offset policy, there's reference to consultation with experts in the field. Who are the experts that were consulted with the formation and content of the wording of the Kingborough Biodiversity Offset Policy?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, that is absolutely correct. It's not a new policy, though. It was a review of the existing policy that occurred. So biodiversity offsetting, as you know, has been undertaken in Kingborough for a very long time, quite successfully. So it's not new, but it was a review. The most recent review, Council consulted with technical experts in the field, which were predominantly ecological specialists, consultants that work with the policy on a day-to-day basis pretty much with council, and also the state government and the Forest Practices Authority. I don't have the full list of who they were, but if we could take that on notice, we could potentially provide that to you.
Thank you. And my last question, has any consideration been given to including bushfire mitigation works as a necessary stewardship expense that would need to be accounted for when protecting biodiversity assets for perpetuity? Are landholders hosting biodiversity offsets made aware of their liabilities under the Fire Act to mitigate the risk of fire on their property and from spreading to their neighbours?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. That's a really good question. Conservation covenants, so one part of the biodiversity offset program in Kimbra is about private land conservation. So it's about looking for properties in Kimbra and landholders who are interested in entering into a conservation covenant under the Nature Conservation Act. It is the state government, therefore, who negotiates that conservation covenant and the plan that goes with it. So it would be within that conservation management plan, which again is a statutory document, which would say whether fire and clearing could be used on that parcel. Generally, conservation covenants, as you might know, are not places close to residential areas or don't generally have a dwelling in them. They're usually on a large property. They can be, of course. They can be close to residential areas. As you would also know, fire is really important for native vegetation in Tasmania. So we would encourage landowners to do low-intensity burns, to do fuel reduction burns, if that was something that was required. The council's not against people doing fuel reduction. Vegetation clearing, of course, would not be undertaken in a conservation covenant, but if it needed a break for some reason, a fuel break on the outside of that, then that would be negotiated with the landowner, usually by the state government at the time of the conservation covenant going on the title.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Biggins. Are there any further questions from the public? If not, thank you very much for your questions. We now move to questions on notice from the public. We have four listed there. The first one is from Professor Rowan in relation to a responsible person conducting a business or undertaking at council, with a response from Mr. Arnold. The second one is from Mr. Biggins in relation to bushfire readiness, with a response from Ms. Larang and Mr. Basham. The third one is from Ms. Landon and in relation to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme, with an officer's response from Ms. Tyler Moore. And the fourth one is also from Mr. Biggins in relation to bushfire readiness, with an officer's response from Ms. Larang. Just a reminder that for those who are watching at home, that if anybody would like to submit a question on notice that will then appear in the following council meeting's agenda, they can do so by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Questions without notice from councillors. Do any councillors have a question without notice? I've got Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Gladright.
Thank you, Mayor. My first two questions are about road safety. The first road safety question regards line markings on Redwood Road in Kingston. It's come to my attention that the line markings on Redwood Road between Redwood Village and the Butterfield Link, Algona Road, have become faded or they're no longer visible, especially on the bends. This may be dangerous as cars tend to take a direct line and sometimes they end up crossing onto the wrong side of the road. Does council have a plan to repaint the line markings on Redwood Road?
Mr. Reeve, I believe, would be able to assist us with that.
Thank you.
Through you, Mayor, Council doesn't have a plan to remark those. That's not Council responsibility. That's actually a Department of State growth responsibility. So each year they do come back to Council and actually ask for particular candidates, which we put forward. It would be fair to say that we have more candidates than they have the ability to fund. I'm not sure off the top of my head whether that one was one of the ones that was put forward. Generally, our list is reasonably long and only part of them get funded, but I'm happy to chase that one up and see.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, the second question about road safety is Auburn Road in Kingston. At Auburn Road, cars are parking on both sides of the street, causing motorists sometimes to cross onto the other side of the road to avoid parked cars, and the issue is, according to the constituent I spoke with, particularly acute near the crest at the southern end of Auburn Road. There are concerns also around the Metro bus passengers egressing safely. Has Council considered options to make this road more safe?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I'll answer it in a couple of ways. So it is a project that's actually sitting in our five-year plan to completely reconstruct Auburn Road, and it's currently being designed this financial year. But in terms of the immediate safety issue, yes, we are aware of the fact that there's been some more cars that have been parking in Auburn Road, not all the time, but on occasions. So we are in the process of actually having some discussions with some of the residents in that area there, and we will be looking at putting some further controls in to actually try and control those vehicles, particularly where they're getting near to the bend, which is closer to Nina.
Thank you. Just to follow up through you, Mayor, with those further controls, is it too early to say roughly what they might be? Are they traffic calming, or are they potentially parking restrictions, or what might they look like?
Yeah, Through you, Mayor. Yes, it'll be either parking restrictions or potentially it may be some repainting of the line. So there is a white line that's actually in that area in Auburn Road. Because it's a relatively narrow road, that will effectively preclude people parking in that dangerous area.
Thank you. And through you, Mayor, my final question is actually about play spaces. This one is about a playground for Peggy's Beach Electrona, I should say near Peggy's Beach. I note that in Appendix 5 of the Kingborough Play Space and Playground Strategy 2020 to 2025, it reads that, quote, Electrona, increased residential development is currently poorly serviced by play opportunities for local family groups, end quote. So my question is, to cater for the growing population in Electrona, has the council ever considered creating a play space in the wedge of land south of Dixon Street near Peggy's Beach?
Thank you. I'll ask Mr Smee to address that. I know we've had some discussions about this in the past. Mr Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we do indeed own land in that area that could potentially be used for playground development. I'd have to say it's not something we've looked at in detail. As you're aware, we've recently done a playground audit that has identified that the majority of our existing playgrounds need upgrading before we look at new ones. The development of the Ashton Dennehy Park was in part predicated on use by Electrona residents, and similarly the replacement of the Snug Brook footbridge so residents from Electrona could get to Ashton Dennehy Park to utilise that playground was a consideration there. So to answer the question, yes, it is a consideration for us, but it would be a longer term rather than short term one.
Thank you, that's all.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next up, Councillor Glaidwright.
Thank you. I was receiving some reports that there were some mischievous young people who were swimming out to yachts in Snug and causing a little bit of damage out there, and there was a suggestion that we could put a pontoon down there for them. I was just wondering who looks after those pontoons and how much do they cost, and have we considered one for Blackmans Bay and Snug? At all.
We do look after them. They cost us a bit when they run aground. Mr Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I am aware about 10 years ago there was a pontoon proposed at Snug. I'm not aware we've ever proposed one at Blackmans Bay. There are issues in relation to the need to have them in a sheltered spot, because otherwise they are very difficult to anchor and they also do provide liability issues for council. As to what they cost, Mr Reeve might be able to help me on that.
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, don't quote me on this figure there, but I think we're talking about something like about $50,000 or so per pontoon, so they're not cheap. It's not like a piece of wood that we stack out in the middle of the bay there. So, and certainly neither of those actually feature on our short-term plans.
Mm-hmm. Understood. My next question was about the Reconifelt that we use. I note that the soft plastics, the Red Cycle soft plastics, has recently ceased, which was terrible to hear, but it did make me think about the Reconifelt. Do they collect soft plastics from Tasmanians to make, or where is that made? Is there some way, like, would council be able to collect soft plastics and send it to their Reconifelt factory?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So effectively where they actually get the additive, which they put into their normal mix there to make Reconifelt, is through a few different sources, but their factory for making it is actually in Sydney. Right. And if you like, the additive is very similar to lots of pellets that you might actually see, so that's what it actually looks like. So yes, there has been some issues that have been publicised with the Red Cycle, but that's not actually impacting in terms of the production of Reconifold for our roads.
Right, okay. And my last question was about the container deposit scheme. What's Kingborough's involvement in that scheme? Do we have locations identified for one of those deposit places?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So it's still going through a process at the moment there where they are actually finalising the scheme. So they have actually advertised for people that could run the scheme. I believe they've just extended that out into the new year. So we've had some discussions at least with one potential provider of those services there of possible locations. But I guess that won't be finalised until the decision's made on the final network provider. And at that stage there, we'll have some further discussions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, Councillor Gladright? I've got Councillor Fox and then Councillor Bain. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I was told over the weekend that plastic bottles that come from milk bottles, plastic milk bottles, are no longer being used in the recycling system because if they're not, people aren't washing them. And if they're not washed, the bacteria becomes so putrid in them that they contaminate the furniture that's made with the plastic, and the odour is so bad that it doesn't disappear even when they've been melted and made into furniture. And therefore the recycling people are no longer collecting them. I would like to ask Mr. Reeve if that is an urban myth or whether that is reality.
Mr. Reeve, can you be a mythbuster?
Through you, Mayor. I do like my urban myths, but I'm not really sure about that one. That's not come to my attention before, so as far as I know, they were still collecting plastic milk bottles, so I haven't heard of that one, but I'm happy to actually chase that up with our provider for our collector, just to see whether that's the case or not.
They may well be collecting them, but they may not be using them. That's my concern. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Bain. And then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question about public transport for Spring Farm and Whitewater Park Estates. Several meetings ago, Mayor, I think you spoke about a conversation you had with Minister Ferguson about the lack of public transport servicing these areas. And Minister Ferguson requested Council send through details of how many people reside in these subdivisions. Just wondering if that letter's been sent yet or not.
I can't remember the outcome of this, and we were going to try. It wasn't as simple as finding that information from. It was going to have to be a combination of our rates department and also our planning department. And I don't think I've seen the figures for that yet. So, Mr. Arnold.
Yep, through you, Mayor. No, I concur. I haven't seen the figures for that yet, Councillor Bain, but we'll take it on notice and follow it up.
Okay, can I just add to that, because I've been receiving a lot of emails from residents who have written to state government about this issue, and within the reply from state government are saying that these subdivisions are a long way from being built out, completed. So I think it is important that we get the message to them that
Sure. They're
pretty full.
Yep.
And also, can we add that there's no state government contracted school buses servicing the area, and there's a lot of families there, so...
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. First question is in regards to the Huntingfield Park and Ride bicycle locking area. I was informed that it had been locked, and so I checked on two occasions and it was locked, so I'm just wondering if we know any details about why it's been locked, and if not, can we please follow up?
Mr. Reeve, I reckon you'll know the answer to this.
Through you, Mayor, I don't know the answer to it, but I'm happy to follow it up.
Thank you.
That was the briefest answer from Mr. Reeve ever, except for imminent.
I normally send a question, but I just remembered that one. The Youth Action Kingborough, I'm wondering if we have any updates in regards to if this group is still occurring and how it's going.
Dr. Fox.
I'll have to take that on notice. I'm sorry, I don't have the information at hand.
Any further questions without notice from councillors? If not, we'll move on. We're still on page 7. We had a number of questions on notice from the previous meeting, the first one on climate action from Councillor Cordova, with a response from Mrs Loxley. Oh, that was the only one. Beg your pardon. So we're now at petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions currently still being actioned, and at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no petitions that had been received. We come now to page 8, officers' reports to council. We have the Kingborough LGBTIQA plus action plan with a recommendation on page 10. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I have a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Gladright. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm so glad to move this motion tonight for the LGBTIQA plus action plan and report as being the chair of that working group. And before I start talking in more detail about this, there are a number of people that I'd like to acknowledge. Firstly, Mr. Julian Punch, who's in our audience tonight, if that's okay. Most of us know Julian. He reached out to me a few years ago when I asked if council could fly the Pride flag at a council meeting. And that question provided a meeting with Mr. Punch, and the understanding of his history in working with local government and the years of work by members of the Kingborough Huon Valley Coming Out Proud program, a long outstanding partnership that commenced in 2005 with Rainbow Communities Tasmania Incorporated, and understanding his continuing advocacy for members of the LGBTIQA plus community across Tasmania. Thank you to all the members of the working group for their time, their comments and guidance, the process, questions, reflections and thoughts on all aspects of the engagement and action plan. It was a great model of a working group that council can learn from when working with many other community members to find out their needs. Thank you to Dr. Katrina Stevenson, previous council director, who was a big catalyst for making this happen at council. I think sometimes as councillors we talk to community members, but then moving things along does take time in regards to the time and process and staffing needs in that area as well. So thank you, Dr. Stevenson, for that. Thank you, Deputy Mayor Gladright, for your attendance at meetings. And thank you to the staff in community services involved, and mostly Melissa Staples, who really carried the workload to make this happen, which I believe was a very good time frame considering the breadth of engagement and coordination of the working group to a great document that we have before us tonight. 162 people had input into the survey, which was developed by the working group, and it went broadly out to the community via library, events, schools, sporting groups and local community groups, etc. The results from this survey were put together in an engagement report, and highlights from that, I'll try and be brief. Normally I don't need a timer, I should have practiced what Councillor Cordova overwhelmingly, the Kingborough was seen as a friendly, welcoming, progressive and accepting community. The majority of respondents reported that they have not witnessed, harassed or discrimination against other people because of their LGBTIQA plus identity. However, when we looked at the data, there was specifically from people who identified as LGBTIQA plus, a respondent stated that they had witnessed harassment or discrimination in Kingborough during the last 2 years. And there's quite a few quotes and anecdotes that I won't read all of them, but I hope that all the councillors have had a look. There's experiences within council, so I think that's really important for us to understand so we know that how, as an organisation, we are an inclusive place for people to come and an inclusive place for people to work. So the comment here, the sports centre, sports grounds and council buildings do not feel very LGBTIQA plus inclusive. As for attending a council meeting or raising an issue, I would not feel safe to do so given the behaviour of some of the councillors. So I'd hope that within 2 years' time, we do not see such a comment like that. And then there were several clear themes emerged to make Kingborough a safe and more welcoming place for the LGBTIQA plus people to live, work and study. And then some further comments that I thought to highlight was, the survey I'm filling in makes me feel safe and welcome. Just gratitude for giving us a voice. Your survey will open many wounds but also provides the bandages, a means to share. Thank you for taking the time to do this work. So I hope that we all read the results of that survey with those thoughts in mind. The findings were distilled into an action report, which again is in our council agenda. And again, this action report came back to the working group. People provided feedback and they distilled the themes that were provided from the engagement. And as you can see, there's four broad themes in the action plan of greater understanding
So to understand the experiences and needs of our LGBTIQA plus community members and respond in a way that are inclusive and welcoming, celebrate and visibility, feeling safe, heard and having a supportive place. I'm not going to read them all because of time. And equal access. And so you'll see in the action plan that there are immediate actions and actions that require greater understanding. And with the actions that require greater understanding, again, members will be involved in having conversations around that. But some of the actions that can be immediate is... it can be such a simple thing, but a big thing for some people in regards to flying the pride, the rainbow flag, and...
Time.
Would you like an extension of time? I'm sure somebody will move that. Moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox that Councillor Midgley be given another 3 minutes. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Councillor Midgley, you have another 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, beg your pardon. Oh, beg your pardon, I didn't hear it, sorry. So it's we'll have a show of hands then required. The motion is that Councillor Midgley be allowed to speak for a further 3 minutes. All those in favour is Councillors Fox, Cordova, Dean, Bain, Richardson. You have to vote, Councillor Midgley, Glade Wright and Reid, and those against, Councillor Antoli. The motion is carried. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you for your support, councillors. So as you can see, there are immediate actions and then actions requiring further consultation. I don't need to read through all those immediate actions and further consultation actions, but it's great that we have a really, I think it's quite a succinct and actions that can be aimed for. And some of them, even though I can see that in the report it does reference that we will need some budget to allocate to fulfil some of those actions, I can see that some of the actions that are written there actually can be done by staff at no cost, and also there's quite a number of grants, for example, that you can apply for. So the Working It Out has community grants that people can apply for, and different councils across Tasmania can probably provide a whole range of different grants that they've applied for as well. The Burnie Council and Sheffield Council are doing some really great work in this space, as is Clarence Council as well, and the City of Hobart. So in the second phase of consultation, the action plan again went out for community consultations. I think they've done a really thorough job, and it was great to see Equality Tasmania through President Rodney Croom commented that the plan is unprecedented. No other council in Tasmania has gone to such trouble to find out what the LGBTIQA plus community wants and to develop a draft action plan and response. We are very supportive of what you have done. Congratulations. So I hope councillors can see the importance of this for Kingborough, and you'll support councils' commitment to creating a community that is inclusive, safe, welcoming and respectful for all. Local government is the level closest to the people and is a core part of our communities. Local government is uniquely positioned to foster community spaces and values that centre diversity, are safe and are welcoming to all. So that's what I'd like to say on that. I hope to have your support. There's just one question that I had myself, and that was in regards to in the recommendation, noting that the action plan is to 2025. I'm just wondering at all, do we need to put a B in the recommendation, I guess, to look at a time frame so we can track how the action plan is going, and saying that that we have quite a number of action plans across a council and in community services particular, and if we are going to be doing more of these for other community groups, how I understand we track it in the annual report with a sort of a tick or a halfway there sort of a thing, but how then will it kind of come back to council? Because I'd really love to understand exactly what has been achieved and what hasn't been achieved, and how can that be reviewed, I guess, by council.
Dr. Fox, could you assist us with that, please?
Sure, thank you for the question. So we could provide some reporting back, either through the quarterly reports that come back to council or the annual report. I'm always loath to set up another reporting structure for plans and strategies, but certainly it will be important to demonstrate our progress on implementing this plan, so I'm more than happy to commit to some reporting 12 months from the sign-off, from the endorsement of the plan, or certainly 12 months from the funding of the plan, which we're still yet to determine. So more than happy to commit to reporting. I think probably the quarterly and the annual reporting is the most appropriate forum, but I'll take advice on that.
Great.
Thank you very much for that, and I look forward to hearing from other councillors.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Next, I have Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I'll just take this opportunity now to, in light of what we've just heard, move an amendment to add a, if it pleases the mover and seconder, to add a B to the recommendation that Council will review the actions in November 2025, but I'm happy to read the room to see if we want to manipulate that somewhat. But that,
we don't like manipulating things. That's not a very nice word, but I think what
Councillor... To amend my amendment.
I think what Councillor Midgley was indicating was a more regular form of reviewing, not just at the end of that period of time, if I took your words correctly.
I guess it was just a question around that it would be reviewed and that, for example, we can have a look at that and see, because you know, there is a lot to do within a two-year time frame, and staff, there could be changes or different things happen and whatever, just to note that that doesn't kind of just left by the wayside, that it is an important document and how do we keep track of that?
Dr. Fox.
I was just going to add that maybe the appropriate way to ensure it is monitored is to put it forward as an action in the next annual plan, and then it will be a regular item that's reported on in those quarterly reports and the annual report at the end of the year. If we say from... because we haven't yet considered the funding for this, and we won't consider the funding for this until the next financial year, it would be good to have it included if there's funding provided through the budget process from mid-2023 to mid-2024, and to then have a 12-month reporting at the end of that financial year, if there's funding provided through the budget process, reporting on that. So if it's funded through the budget process, it will be included in the annual plan and then will be reported on quarterly and in the annual report at the end of that financial year. Does that make sense?
Councillor Cordova, does that satisfy you, or did
it make sense? Now, do we need to put that as a form of words as a B item in this motion, or do we just take it as read?
Dr. Fox, have you got a short set of words that could
I would
suffice?
Suggest we delay that until we've considered the funding aspect in the budget process.
Yes. Okay, that's fine then.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Do you want to make a contribution?
Yeah, so to I guess without relitigating all of... I firstly want to congratulate Councillor Midgley and everybody that was involved in this, particularly the staff as well, and all of those key stakeholders who contributed. The main themes, I think, is the big takeaway here. It's greater understanding, it's celebration and visibility, it's feeling safe, heard and having a supportive place, and it's equal access. And this council, you know, to hear the words of Rodney Crome, what a ringing endorsement for what we're doing here and how we're trying to make this an inclusive space. I think it really is uplifting and warming to know that our hearts are in the right place and we're trying our best. And the first step to trying your best is to listen. And so I think this has been a good process. It's an iterative process. That's why I was so keen to move an amendment or at least reflect in the chamber tonight that this isn't a set and forget kind of thing. It's something that you put up and then you work with and you adapt and improve as time goes on. So I think these are great first steps, and I commend the motion, and congratulations to all involved. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Do I have any further speakers? If not, I will just make a contribution before anyone else wants to. I just wanted to thank the working group and Councillor Midgley and Councillor Gladewright for their work on this issue. I think that the model that has been used of the working group and how quickly it progressed through this year is a refreshing model, and one that I think we could probably adopt to other groups. And indeed we did have a motion at our AGM on the weekend in relation to giving multicultural community in Kingborough a voice, and so this is maybe potentially a form of model that we could use for that as well. But I think that this is a very good report. It was good to see so many people who engaged in the survey. It does trouble me, even though a lot of people said that they had never personally experienced harassment or discrimination or felt unsafe in Kingborough. I think that this figure, which says that of those who did identify as LGBTIQA+, almost 30% of respondents stated that they had felt unsafe in Kingborough sometime in the last 2 years. That makes me incredibly sad to hear that, and we should not have that type of community where somebody, because of their sexual orientation or their background, feels unsafe where they live. So I think there are some very powerful messages in here. I note that certainly that people overwhelmingly said that they hadn't experienced any of these feelings at council venues, but I think there is still more work that we can do. And I note that in the presentation that Mr. Smee gave to the AGM on the weekend, that we discussed the fact that we were going to, as we're doing up public toilets, that we're going to move to have some gender neutral ones, and that the universal access ones be for all sexes. And I think that's a small but positive step that we can do. I really like the way that this has been set out so that there are some immediate actions that I think we can do very quickly. One of the things that I found very powerful that we did earlier this year was when we had Working It Out come and do a workshop with councillors and any staff that wanted to come along. I thought that was very interesting and very important, and it made me realise that some of the smallest things that we do, for example, our forms and how prescriptive we are around just, you know, asking, putting everybody in a box and saying they have to be this, this or this, and being a bit more flexible the way that we word things and the information that we seek, and respecting people's privacy but their rights to have their choice of how they're addressed and so on, are what I would say organisationally small things, but things that we can do effectively that will make a significant difference. So I think there's obviously some resource issues with some of these things, but I think there is, I hate the term, but the low-hanging fruit is there for some actions that we can fulfil. And particularly around our sporting infrastructure, our sports centre here at the Civic Centre, and other community pieces of infrastructure. So thank you very much to all the members of the working group who took part. We put out expressions of interest and we had a really strong group, and importantly very representative of age groups as well, and I think they've produced an excellent body of work. I did want to thank Mel Staples for the work that she's done on this, because I know it's an area that she's very passionate about, and I do hope that this is endorsed by councillors tonight, because I think it is part of us saying as a council that we want to have a safe, caring and inclusive community for everybody who lives in Kingborough. So thank you, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Gladright, for your work. I'll just turn myself off after that. That is not the end of the debate. I've got Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Dean. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have also some questions, if I may, about the report. But my contribution is that I believe we do have a safe and inclusive community in Kingborough. It's obvious from the comments from the people that they believe that Kingborough is a safe and inclusive community. In my own personal life, I'm proud to head an organisation that over 10 years ago was the first government-funded shelter in Tasmania to take into its care a trans individual, a person born female who identifies as male, after every other shelter in the state had rejected that person based on safety grounds. We're still in touch with that person. We've been an absolute leader in that respect. We've had multiple trans people in our care, one right now who I'm also assisting with. And it's been an absolute pleasure to help people with that sort of a background, because with my own psychology background, I'm very well aware that we are complicated human beings, and that with various things that happen to us and various traumas, life is tough, and that we need to make sure that people are safe, that they feel included. My concern is, are we looking at a report here that was written with that was looking for a questionnaire to support it? The raft of recommendations are community-wide. there's going to be the placing of the Pride flag on top of the building without community consultation, which quite a number of people in the community of a migrant background, of a faith background, might find that very difficult to swallow. Have they been consulted and asked? 102 people responded to this survey who identify as LGBTQIA+. A number of people identified as... the majority identified as male or female. A huge number identified as heterosexual. There's an enormous raft of a regime of sweeping changes that need to be applied to counsellors, that will affect staff. Will a staff member who doesn't want to wear an ally badge be vilified or bullied? Will a counsellor who doesn't want to wear an ally badge be vilified or bullied? Will a staff member who does not want to go to a working out forum be vilified? I've been to multiple working out forums. I've asked my staff to come to those forums. I found them very helpful. But that's my personal choice. So I have concern that this report is quite sweeping. It affects even... gender diverse toilets. I'd like to know, what does that mean? That's my first question. What is a gender diverse toilet?
That was actually the second or third question, so we'll take that one and then we'll go back to the one about the flag policy, because I can give you some information about that. Mr. Smee, do you want to help us about the toilets?
Through you, Mayor. So whereas we previously have had gender specific, we now aim to have gender neutral, so they are unisex.
So they're individual cubicles?
Yes.
Right. So will we be having toilets where men, biological men, can walk into the women's toilet? Will that form part of this reform?
Through you, Mayor, the toilets are unisex, so there's no longer male or female. They are gender neutral.
So for the toilets that are mixed, where you go into a toilet like we have here in council and there's more than one cubicle, will we be putting up signs to say that you are welcome in this female toilet if you identify as male? I've gotten a lot of questions about that.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, where we have existing facilities that are male and female, and we haven't been able to upgrade them to be unisex throughout, they will remain male and female, but as the Mayor previously noted, we will be endeavouring to provide the disability access facility as a gender neutral facility.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. I think the public will appreciate the fact that they will not have put upon them that that unsafe situation. I have a question about the flag.
Oh, the flag.
So could you explain what consultation we will do before putting up the Pride flag on top of council properties?
So earlier this year, back in March this year, I brought a motion successfully to council to have a fourth flagpole installed in the forecourt, because the issue that's been plaguing us previously is that when we've had a request from a community organisation such as Legacy, who during Legacy Week, they have asked us to fly their flag, and that means that we then have to take down an existing flag. So we have now installed a fourth flagpole, which unfortunately got held up, but it's up, literally up now. It doesn't have any flags on at the moment because we're going to be developing a flag policy. The policy did come before council, I think it was when I was away with COVID back in July or August, and it raised some more questions about it, because the idea is that it be available for a number of groups to request to have flags flown during the year for days or weeks of specific nature. It's certainly not unlike other councils that have flag policies, but my understanding, as I said, I wasn't there, but my understanding is the debate sort of opened up a few more questions, and so we've agreed that in the new year we'll be having a workshop in relation to the flag policy before it comes back to council again. So there will be an opportunity for people to make comment on that policy once it hits the agenda.
What? Thank you for that answer. What will be the status of an employee or a councillor who does not want an ally badge or to attend a working out session?
Dr. Fox or the General Manager? Dr. Fox, either?
Look, the intention of this action plan is to be inclusive. So certainly we would encourage people who are willing and want to attend those forums to attend those forums and to wear the ally badges. But if individuals are not keen to attend for various reasons, that's fine. And if they don't want to wear the badge, that's fine too. We're not trying to exclude anybody. We're really trying to be inclusive.
So I actually had a phone call from a member of staff who's terrified that he is going to be vilified over this because he is of a particular faith where homosexuality is frowned upon. He's scared that he will be out of a job if he does want to stand by his faith and not participate in this. And he says, I'm the most welcoming person in the community. I welcome those as I have been welcomed into this country, in this community. What is this person's employment status based on this reform agenda?
Well, as Dr. Fox has just stated, it's a voluntary it's a voluntary participation in wearing a badge or taking part in the forums, just as it is at other times of the year when we have, White Ribbon Day, and people choose to wear a white ribbon or they don't. In the past, that during there used to be red ribbons for World AIDS Day that people could wear. And as you do in State Parliament and Federal Parliament, members and staffers make a choice aligned with their beliefs and their conscience to either participate in that and wear that and not. And that's, I guess, freedom of choice. And we certainly are not mandating this for any members of staff or any councillors, but what we want people to do is feel free to wear those badges if they wish to.
Thank you. There is concern that this is a slippery slope where we say that they won't be targeted and that they're fearful that they will be, because then there will be a culture of you versus us. So they talk about inclusivity not applying to them.
Yeah. Well, all I can say is that we do have a code of conduct that applies to employees, and if any of our staff at any time feel that they have been vilified, threatened, harassed, bullied, or whatever words you would like to put to it, then certainly they need to have a conversation with our HR manager, and appropriate action will be taken, because we want to have a safe work environment for everyone, whether it's councillors and staff and visitors to the Civic Centre as well.
So I put onto the socials, what did people think about this? I'd like to know. I do like to know what people think. You know, I'm an elected official. I want them to know, and I put it out there. And I would say on the socials it was mixed in terms of what was in public. It was leaning towards positive. I was overwhelmed with the number of private messages, private emails and phone calls of people who are not happy with this. And the overwhelming question was, this reform agenda places upon council property and into the community the needs and the agenda of a really small minority. And when will they get a voice into whether or not they want a pride flag, whether they want the staff to have ally badges, whether they want people going to their state schools offering this raft of services? I've had business people say, I don't have any issues with gay people. Now I have to either submit going into a business index as to whether or not I'm gay or gay not friendly, the entrance point being that I have to go to working out or whatever gender inclusive training for me and my staff. Am I now going to be shunned and shamed that I'm not part of this directory? There's a whole raft of things that this reform agenda actually wants to apply to the community that I don't see it got from the survey. I'm concerned that the actual reform agenda was written well before the survey. The survey went out and a tissue of statistics have been applied to the survey to now apply to the entire Kingborough community. So where is going to be the public consultation over the thousands of ratepayers as opposed to 102 LGBTQI plus people, and we don't even know if they even came from Kingborough, it's anonymous, and if they voted more than once to get to that number?
I think with most surveys, and I'm probably sure it was the case with this one, you can actually only set it up so that they only vote once because it recognises your URL. So unless somebody was...
Your IP address, correct.
Yep. So unless somebody was very passionate about this and accessed multiple computers, I think we can probably discount that people have voted like that. I firmly believe that this has been gone into with the best of intentions in terms of forming the working group and then and its terms of reference, and then identifying how best they could go out to the wider community in Kingborough and ask people for their views on things like safety and inclusion and discrimination. And look, I would like to see 5,000 people answer this survey. It would be great if they had. They chose not to. This is actually in terms of surveys that we put out. This is a healthy number of people that have responded. The one thing I've learned during my time here is that unless people have a vehement objection to something, they can be apathetic and not want to engage in taking the time to do a survey because people are busy. So I do feel confident that the wider community, this survey was put out to everyone. It was put out on our social medias. It was put out on our website. We have 9,000 people who follow Kingborough Council on our Facebook page alone. So it went to those 9,000 people. It went out in media releases. It went out to different community groups asking for people. We can't force people to fill in a survey. The opportunity has been provided to the broader community, and we got this number, but I think that's a healthy response rate. People, you know, the response rate for surveys is very, very low, unfortunately.
I do remember seeing the survey come through the socials, and it made it very clear that they wanted to hear the views of the LGBTQIA plus community, of which I and the vast majority of Kingborough are not members of, so we didn't contribute. So that's the problem. And that we have a survey, given that we have a survey about the views of the...
Sorry, I beg your pardon. Mr. Smee has just indicated that you've used your 5 minutes.
I'll move to extend it.
Okay, I've got a mover that... 3 more minutes? That Councillor Antoli be provided 3 more minutes. Moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Okay, I'll take a show of hands, please. All those in favour is Councillor Fox, Cordova, Bain, Richardson. Oh, sorry, let's try that again. Antoli, Councillors, sorry, those in favour. Let's try that again. Councillors Antoli, Fox, Cordova, Bain, Richardson and Reet. Those against is Councillors Dean, Midgley and Gladewright. So the motion is successful, so you have another 3 minutes.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate that extension, Council Cordova. I suppose no other issue has lit up my phones like this one. I don't know why. You put things out on the socials, I suppose people respond. The LCZ issue is close. I don't think... probably is more vehement. The number one comment is, this is a raft of changes that you would like to impose upon staff, businesses and the community. Definitely on staff and councillors. Without consultation outside of an incredibly small subset of the community, a subset that I have been actively supporting hand and glove for over 10 years. But I have to respect the vast majority. And so the feedback is, when are we, the rest of the community, going to get a say on this too? Because the actual survey that went out in October was aimed at a very specific community saying, how can we help you, this subset of community? And I have no problems with that. I have no problems with making them feel more inclusive. I understand the torment that a trans person feels going into a toilet that is opposite to the agenda that I identify with. I commend the fact that we're going for unisex toilets, because then you can stop that problem completely and everyone feels safe. But there is a whole range of things in here that just do not include the rest of our community. And when Mr. Croom says that we are going further than any other council in Tasmania, including the most wokest, which is Hobart, you've got to ask yourself, are we going too far? So my final question is, when was the report drafted? It's too comprehensive for me to feel convinced it was drafted after the survey landed on your tables.
I might ask Councillor Midgley, or I don't know, Dr. Fox, you weren't here then, so that's no. Councillor Midgley, would you like to speak to that? Because I didn't have a direct involvement because I wasn't part of the working group.
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
When was the report drafted, please? The actual action plan. The committee has been running for some time, 6 months or something like that?
Sorry, yes, I can't remember the exact dates because we'd have had an election between those times. So the working group possibly 6 months ago, and then the initial, while the working group developed the survey, that survey went out to the broad community. It was in the library for everybody to take part of. And if people wanted to have some views in regards to what you're expressing, they could have actually done that as well. They didn't. Very small minority did. In regards to then, it came back to the working group. The working group evaluated the responses, distilled the action plan, and then the action plan went out, and I would say that was about approximately 2 months ago. Can I get a nod from staff? Yep, so about 2 months ago. And then we had to wait for the new council for then it to become. And actually, so it was quite a good process, but it has been back and forth to the community centre, sporting clubs, schools, a whole range of people to participate. And as the Mayor has said, this was actually quite a high uptake. We were very, very pleased with the number of people that did have a say in regards to this. And during the while the survey was out, if we did have any negative comments or fears and such that you're talking about, then people could have actually said something, but they didn't.
Did you include any negative feedback? Because with the survey that we're going to be looking later about the memorial in Kingston Beach, there's a lot of feedback for and against that has been included, so it's helpful. There's nothing like that in here. It's all positive, positive, positive. So I'm trying to understand how you captured any of the opposing views.
Do you want to? Sorry, Councillor Midgley.
From my understanding, all the feedback would have been captured. And I think the War Memorial is a different one because you weren't able to capture that other feedback in the survey. This survey, however, all the feedback was captured. And from my understanding, all of it is in the report or summarised, therefore. But all the, if there was any of that feedback that you're talking about, that would have been captured.
The $20,000, where will that money, is that intended to go? And how did you come up with that figure?
Dr. Fox.
Thank you for your comments. I will just add to some previous comments that were made. So we did have 162...
Sorry, Dr. Fox, because you're wearing a... Could you just,
come close?
Yeah, yep. Thank you.
So we did have 162 people fill in the survey. Of those 162, 126 live in Kingborough, mm-hmm. And a further 20 study, work or recreate in Kingborough.
Yep.
5 preferred not to say, and 11 were other. So we do believe that a large number... the vast majority were from Kingborough. As was mentioned, the individual IP addresses make sure that only one response per person, unless they have multiple IP addresses in some way. In terms of the funding, councillors are being asked tonight to endorse or not endorse the action plan. The funding and the budget submission will come forward in the budget process. We just wanted to give you a ballpark of what that might look like at this stage. We're talking about $10,000 a year for 2 financial years. That funding is intended to be used for the signage at toilets, where we can
provide that gender inclusive signage for the appropriate toilets, for the training that might be offered to staff and to aldermen, and for community groups, for promotional events and celebratory activities, and for flag flying and those sorts of things. So at this stage it's an indicative cost. That funding submission, that budget bid will go up through the normal process. Councillors will have an opportunity to see that detail and to approve or not approve that bid or elements of that bid. We just wanted to put a number, an indicative number, forward with this plan so you know what that looks like.
Thank you. I've asked a lot of questions. I appreciate Council answering those questions. One of the two most comforting things I've heard is that, A, the toilets will not be mixed gender toilets, and that the flag pole will be able to be used by other people apart
Absolutely.
From just one group.
Yep.
I'll hand over to other councillors now if
Thank
they have
you,
any
Councillor
other questions.
Anne. Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Are there any further? Councillor Dean.
Yeah, look, I'm happy to support this. I congratulate staff and Councillor Midge, who's clearly very passionate about the subject and has worked really, really hard on it. Just bear with me, as we've spent obviously a fair bit of time talking about this already, so I think it's actually worthy of a decent comment. For me, reading the report brought to light many positive stories about the people who feel we are becoming more respectful and inclusive of the LGBTIQA+ community, and that was really nice to hear. But the survey revealed that there's still a way to go, as the Mayor has commented on. I do believe Council has the capacity...
Sorry, Councillor Dean, can you move your microphone a little bit closer, because you're fading out a little bit and I'm worried we're not going to pick you up on the recording. Thank you.
Thank you.
Use your big teacher voice.
Yeah, it's been going all day. Thanks. Look, I do believe Council has the capacity to play its part. Council has provided obviously a lot of services. Perhaps the most visible of these are our public spaces, whether it's community halls, sporting grounds or playgrounds. And so in recent years, there's been a lot of work done to make sure those spaces are made safe and accessible. For example, Kingborough has its own Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee, who has been pushing for improvements in this space for a number of years. So it makes sense that as a council we develop our public spaces to be also safe for LGBTIQA+ community. The type of actions suggested in this report I don't think are going to cost the world. Having an all-gender bathroom, celebrating inclusivity every now and then with the flagpole, or advertising welcoming places as optional, they make sense. And just to say that, look, for my generation, I don't want to speak too broadly, and I think for the one that I teach, I feel we're on board with this. I think that young people generally will be really supportive of Councillor Midgley and the staff work and will appreciate the progress that we're making here.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Are there any further comments? Otherwise, I'll ask Councillor Midgley to close the debate.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you to people who have contributed tonight. I would like to say that it's not a reform agenda and it's not something that's going to be imposed on staff. It's important for, as I stated before, and as the Mayor really clearly articulated, that people feel safe and included. It was a thorough consultation. It went out wide to the community. Everybody could have a say. And the results compared to many other surveys and consultation that we have done in regards to like the youth policy, I'm quite sure, actually received a lot more results than this. What the engagement report shows is that we do have much more work to do to ensure that we have an inclusive and safe Kingborough. And following the guidance of the Tasmanian Anti-Discrimination Act as well, I think this report definitely highlights a lot of the statements and sentiments in that act as well that we also need to reflect on when we talk and think about this. And I hope that in 2 years' time, if we were to conduct such a survey again, that we have a 100% result that all people in Kingborough feel safe and included from all ages, from our young people to our older people, and especially those who identify as LGBTIQA+ in our community. So I hope to see support for this, and I hope that we see support for this in our upcoming budget deliberations.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I'm going to put the motion. It's as printed in the agenda and on the screen that Council endorsed the Kingborough LGBTIQA+ Action Plan 2023-2025. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Against.
I'll have a show of hands, please. All those in favour? Councillors Fox, Cordova, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Glade-Wright and Reet. Those against? Councillor Antoli and Councillor Richardson. The motion is carried. We turn now to page 42, Unauthorised Vegetation Damage Signage Policy Review, with a recommendation on page 44. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. The mover in Councillor Glade-Wright, seconder in Councillor Cordova. Councillor Glade-Wright.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to seek Council approval for the revised Unauthorised Vegetation Damage Signage Policy. I note that there were minor revisions made to the policy. The intent of the policy is to educate the community about the impact of vandalising vegetation on public land. Trees and other vegetation in our reserves, streetscapes and coastal areas are fundamental to the character of our municipality. The signage achieves an educational outcome by indicating to the community where tree vandalism has occurred and that it is a serious criminal offence. I'm not sure if there's much more to say, but it looks like a good policy and I support the endorsement.
Thank you, Councillor Glade-Wright. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just at the outset, I'd like to ask for a bit of clarification about the differentiation between Category A signage and Category B, and what are those changes that have taken place?
Sure. Ms Quinn.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. The changes are fairly minor. We've actually changed the size of the smaller sign, because they were actually quite close together in size. So the smaller sign now is more like a road speed sign, about that sort of size. The other major changes in terms of the criteria is before they were quite specific and we had trouble actually deciding which sign, size sign that it fitted, where now we've made it really a lot more specific and we've done that by setting out what the criteria are for a size B sign, and then everything that falls below that is going to be a size A sign. The authorisations remain the same in that one of the smaller signs of A, can be authorised by an authorised officer, and the larger sign B needs to be authorised by the general manager, so it's the same as the other policy. The other thing we've included it, but in the past, the last policy had more of a single outlook on conservation in terms of that, the impact of that damage, and we've actually broadened that out to reflect some of those criteria in the significant tree policy to try to then flow those same reasons that the community value vegetation through our vegetation management policies, if you like.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And through you, Mayor, I guess just another question before I start my contribution, which will be brief, is about the evidence or the evidence base around these signs. I assume that they operate in many other jurisdictions. Is there any way really of measuring whether these have an effect on behaviour or whether they work or whether they don't work? And if they don't work, then it makes perfect sense to make them smaller and smaller and spend less and less money on them. But yeah, I'm just interested in the evidence base around it.
Ms Quinn.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. This type of signage is used quite commonly on mainland Australia, and that's where the idea came from originally. But in Tasmania, I think Kingborough was one of the first municipalities to start using the signs, and since then other councils have asked us for our templates and have used them. In terms of if they're successful, the reason, I guess the way we have monitored that through time is to see if the damage continues, so on that site. So what we have found is that when we have put signs up, so at Snug Esplanade and at Conyngham, as two examples, Kettering, the damage to the vegetation in those places stopped. So I guess once people were aware that damage was occurring, unauthorised damage was occurring, it stopped. I don't have evidence or information from the mainland, though.
That's okay, thank you. And through you, Mayor, I guess something that has been running through my mind is that potentially when the damage does stop, that may very well be because the person who is the the one who wanted the view of the water
has achieved their objective.
They've achieved their objective, and so it's one of those chicken or the egg things. However, ultimately, my feeling is that so much of this is about education and about social cohesion, and this notion that we're living in a community, we're trying to all get along, and that just because there might be some self-interest or self-benefit for one property owner to damage the environment, that they shouldn't do that because of the rest of us, because we're all trying to get along, and that includes biodiversity and flora and fauna as well. And of course, we all well know, as I say often, that we're living through climate breakdown, through an anthropogenic climate emergency and a biodiversity and extinction emergency. So I obviously support the policy, and I was proud to second it. It kind of breaks my heart thinking that people do damage our native wildlife and our natural landscapes for so little. They take so much. Now, if this works, and I hope that it does, I hope it continues to work, I think it's good. And also, I think that we should do everything we can to try and mitigate environmental loss and damage, particularly in areas of important sensitivity. Education really is the key, that we actually need people to not do the damage in the first place, and that is through good communication, and that's through, you know, an endless pursuit of patiently explaining to people why nature is important and why Kingborough is actually so valued by so many people is because it's beautiful and because it's clean and green and because it's got these wonderful natural and cultural assets. So ultimately, I guess I am pleased that we're focusing on, you know, what we can do, what we know that we can achieve, and I think it's an ongoing process. So I thank the author and the authoriser for the work that they're doing, and though it pains me, I think that, you know, we will see these kinds of events on an ongoing basis every now and again, and whatever we can do to mitigate that, we should. So I commend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. And while that was going on, Councillor Midgley left the room at 6:41 and returned at 6:43, and Councillor Dean left the room at 6:43 and returned at 6:44. Councillor Dean, you've got your light on.
Just a basic question. How often does this kind of thing actually occur in the community? I didn't notice that in the report.
Maybe once a year or so, about once a year. I know that, look, it does vary between mature trees that may be blocking someone's view to somebody poisoned. There were some new trees that were planted last year at Sedgebrook Reserve in Bonnet Hill that the community planted after we had grown them in our council nursery. There were about, I think, 15 of the plants. And somebody took it upon themselves to poison all of them, and they all died. And there was no feasible reason why somebody would do that, because of the location, it wouldn't block anyone's view. So that one was a mystery. And they've now been replanted, and the community association's installed a camera to protect them. But we shouldn't have to be putting cameras up everywhere to protect our trees, which is, you know, ridiculous. Anyway, but thankfully it's, you know, maybe an annual thing.
Yeah, look, I'm supportive of the report, of course. It would have been nice. It's obviously nice to hear that it's not so regular. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you, Councillor Dean. Are there any further comments? Councillor Glade-Wright, did you want to sum up? No, thank you. So I will put the recommendation. It's as printed on page 44, that Council endorses the revised unauthorised vegetation damage signage policy 5.7 as attached to this report. It was moved by Councillor Glade-Wright and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 52, Tinderbox Beach Erosion Management Community Consultation Report, with a recommendation on page 56. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess when you look at the report, you might see that I feature in quite a number of the photos, so I do declare an interest.
We won't make you fill out a form for that.
It was wonderful to see so many residents turn up from the area, and also how well the survey was run and organised by Liz Quinn and others from Council, and to speak with our coastal geomorphologist on the spot, Chris Sharples. It was really useful. And the three alternatives that were suggested were heavily debated, we could say, and I'm pleased to see the recommendation is that the engagement that continued after that obviously indicated that there should be a retention of the foreshore, that we should, but there should be a slow retreat, and that there should not, at the, in the first instance, be a solid wall, which is it, from the discussions on site showed that in the long run the beach could be eroded, but it might take a long time. And so the suggestion that we have plantings to protect the foreshore, because it's obviously highly valued by the community, not just by the locals, but also people visiting, people coming there for boating, and also it's a diving area. It's a marine reserve right off that coast. And, you know, I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Further speakers? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I also commend that it was a great, another great engagement and consultation by council staff, and a beautiful beach. It's such an asset and jewel in Kingborough, isn't it, Tinderbox Beach? I'm wondering if the community who were involved in the consultation and engagement for this are aware of this report and the outcomes and recommendation for the next process.
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. After I asked when people filled in the survey and attended the meeting if they'd like to keep updated on the project, and I have been keeping them updated, so I've got an email group. I did let them know that the report was going to council tonight so they could watch if they wanted to. If the report is supported, then it will go on council's website after tonight, but it's not there at the moment. Okay, it's in the agenda.
Thank you. That's all the ticks for engagement boxes, isn't it, getting back to people? Because sometimes it misses out in many cases, not council, but other areas. And in regards to just this is subject to budget deliberations as well, how, I guess that comes down to councillors, doesn't it? But how do you see likely that the landscape planning and improved beach access will be considered in the budget? I guess staff will be putting that forward and it'll be subject to what else is put forward. Is that correct? Getting nods. And also, would there be grants and things like that that possibly could be applied for?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Potentially. I'm not... Usually grants are, that come in this space, although this is more public open space management if it's about a plan for the reserve itself. They normally come in doing work rather than planning, but we'd certainly look out for one. I don't think we're not talking about a major plan for the reserve. It is a small reserve. It's already got a lot of infrastructure in it, so I'm not imagining it's going to be a huge budget bid, but of course there's always lots of competing priorities in the public open space area. So.
Yeah. Thank you. And just noting that it says erosion at this stage is not, critical, but should be monitored. So I guess how are we monitoring that and what's the process in place for this?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. So we currently monitor a number of sites, including Conyngham and Kingston Beach, using a TASMARC methodology, which is a state government developed methodology for surveying. Sometimes community groups do it and sometimes council does, so we'll use that at Tinderbox Beach because what we really need to know and don't have a definite on at the moment is the rate of retreat. So we know that the beach is eroding, but we don't know at the pace of that erosion, apart from looking at historic photos, which we did as part of this process. So that's where we'll be trying to get some more accurate information on how fast that retreat is going.
Thank you, Ms. Quinn. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I think it's that risk that is identified. It's this notion that, you know, if we set a public expectation at a certain level and then we're not able to meet that due to either budgetary constraints or others. But I just wanted to point out that the survey was designed to understand how people use the reserve, what value that they have on it, and to capture their views in different shoreline erosion management options that were proposed. And over 60% of respondents considered addressing the issue of erosion as very important or important. 34% of survey respondents have witnessed major changes to the beach at Tinderbox. 48% have witnessed minor changes. So what that means is, in total, you know, 82% of the people that know this area the best have noticed these changes to the beaches over time. So I was interested, and this will be a question if I can figure it out, that so there are three adaptation options that were presented in the consultation. So there was the managed retreat, sand container treatment or rock rivetment, and the consultation asked people to rank their preferred option. And so it turns out that managed retreat was the highest ranked option. Nearly half of the respondents said that. With the temporary barrier, 31% thought that, and rock armouring, 20% ranked second and third. My question is, whenever we're doing consultations like this, without being a geomorphologist, how do you know that the thing that you're selecting is the right selection? And to what extent do we weight a community opinion? Obviously, if the science and the evidence said, well, the best thing to do is rock rivetment, but the majority of the community said, you know what, it's actually better that we just do a managed retreat, and as community infrastructure gets is put at risk, we're happy to just manage that through retreat. Like, how are we as a council supposed to, I guess, balance those two things? Because on the one side, you've got experts who are telling us some things, and then on the other side, we're asking for community consultation. So can we just hear something about that?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you. That is such a good question. Really important to explain it. So the reason, I guess, when we started this process and started, like the report says, started thinking about what to do at Tinderbox Beach and stormwater and car park improvements, the staff at council at the time said, let's build a rock revetment because the beach is retreating. The beach is eroding. And we could have just gone and done that at that point. We have done that at other sites that have required that in Kingborough. I think what we've learnt through time on coastal hazard management at council, we've had a maturing of how we see it, and we've learnt that whatever you do at the beach, of course, has another reaction at that beach. And we've also thought about that, so we can come and fix erosion, if you like, and slow it down by building a rock revetment or putting sand containers there, because we've done it and learnt what happens there. But it changes the way that the beach works. And the beaches, one of the reasons the beaches are loved by the community. And so in thinking about what we do to erosion at the beach, we try to think about what impact will it have on the ecology of the beach, on the geomorphology of the beach, on the beach users and how people use that beach. So we learnt that if we put a rock wall at somewhere like Tinderbox, which would have happened, similar thing at Cottingham, the beach sand is very shallow and there wouldn't be a beach. So eventually the beach would become drowned with sea level rise, so there'd be less sand, and then eventually as the sea level rose, there would be no beach. And so that's why we ask those questions about what do you value, because I think it's really important to understand, is it the sand? Is it the playground? Is it the picnic area? Is it the barbecue shelter? What is it? And if it's the sand that the community really love and that's why they go there, then maybe it's important that council considers, how can we keep the sand there the longest? And the other part of answering that question about how do the community know, that's why we engaged the geomorphologist Chris Sharples to come along to the community meeting, and his report is actually online, his technical report on our website, because I think it is really important. It's complicated, and that public meeting, we were there for, it was freezing cold, and we were there for, an hour and a half or something, because people had so many questions for Chris to really try and understand what was happening at their beach and what was likely to happen in the future, and what would happen if we put sand containers, what would happen if we put rocks. And so I think that's a really important part of the consultation, is that engagement, so we can bring the community and the people who love that beach along with us on that journey.
Thank you, Ms. Quinn.
Thank
you. Councillor Cordova.
And that was a very helpful answer, and it reinforces in my mind the fact that we know that this natural asset and so many like it throughout the municipality are so well loved by the community, and they're such an integral part of what it means to be a resident or a visitor in Kingborough. And so it is about finding out the views of those stakeholders and then helping them understand what's going on, because the changes are inexorable. I mean, they're kind of locked in. My understanding of it is that we can manage around the edges, but ultimately we're going through we're going through a very rapidly changing time, and so it's really important that we engage the community and bring them along with us, but ultimately there will be some difficult decisions that need to be made. So once again, I thank everyone for the work that's gone into this, and I commend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Do I have further speakers? Councillor Fox, did you want to sum up?
Thanks for the explanation from Ms. Quinn. It's very helpful, and the good question. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. I will put the motion as printed on the screen and in the agenda on page 56. It was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. It's just gone 7 o'clock. We have quite a few other motions and such to get through, so I'm going to just suggest that we have a quick, and I mean really quick, like 5 or 6 minute comfort break. Grab a cuppa, use the amenities, and be back here as soon as you can, and hopefully we won't be here too late. Thank you.